Good evening and welcome to the KRFP Evening Report for Monday, December 30th, 2024. I'm Lee Robartis in the news tonight. Pullman homicide victim who died December 26th identified. Shooter still on the loose. Pullman Police Chief Jake Opkenorth on leave for unknown reason. Two-thirds of private schools standing to benefit from Idaho legislature's proposed handouts to private schools through possible voucher program are religious, and condolences from Northwest lawmakers after the death of Jimmy Carter at 100. We'll have details on those stories and more coming up on the KRFP Evening Report. And live in the KRFP studios in Moscow, Idaho, I'm Lee Robartis, and this is the KRFP Evening Report. Between 16,800 and 22,300 students are already enrolled in private schools in Idaho, and parents who pay those students' tuition are the ones most likely to benefit if any of the right-wing bills pass in the Idaho legislature in the new session, which starts next week. That would allow taxpayer money to be spent on private schooling. The number of enrolled children in grade schools that are private represents between 5% and 6% of the number of school-age children in the state. Idaho State Board of Education researcher Bas Van Dorn said in a brief report relying on the National Center for Education and Private School Review statistics, nearly two out of three of the private schools in Idaho are religious. Most of the religious private schools are Protestant Christian, and one in five are Roman Catholic. Legislators have been debating whether the century-old provision in the Idaho Constitution that prevents taxpayer money from going towards religious schools would stand to U.S. Supreme Court review, with some on the side of public taxpayer money for religious schools noting a recent Trump Supreme Court decision throwing out Montana's similar state constitutional amendment. With the power Christian nationalists have over the Idaho legislature, many on the far right are focusing on the prospect of using our taxpayer money for religious schools, implying they consider that a good thing. Curricula and just about everything else about private schools is unregulated in Idaho, but that fact has not slowed the legislative push to provide taxpayer money to private schools, including religious schools. The Idaho Education News reports accurate statistics about private school enrollment in Idaho are hard to come by. The National Center for Education's survey of private schools is voluntary, and websites like Private School Review curate data that school administrators and private school parents submit to them. Idaho has between 117 and 155 primary and secondary private schools. While the data available shows there are between 16,843 and 22,271 students enrolled in Idaho's private schools, more precise data from the Education Department shows 313,160 students attended public schools in Idaho as of this fall. Public school enrollment has increased every year in the last decade in Idaho, except for the 2020 to 2021 school year. Data on private schools in Idaho indicate their enrollment increased during the COVID pandemic, while public school enrollment was going down for the school year when the pandemic most affected educational institutions. The Idaho Education News reports Idaho's private schools are concentrated in urban areas, and most of Idaho's 44 counties have either one or zero private schools. A map generated by the Idaho Education News shows Ada County by far has the most private grade school students at 8,241. Kootenai County is next with 3,741 students. Canyon County is third with 2,497. Bonneville County is fourth with 1,182. Twin Falls County is fifth with 1,141. And Latah County is sixth with 900 enrolled students. 17 counties, all rural, have zero students enrolled in private grade schools. Benoit County has two. The Idaho Center for Fiscal Policy reports rural communities have unique challenges when funding public schools because those communities have fewer local resources and rely heavily on state funding. Whitman County Coroner Annie Pillars has identified the man shot and killed on California Street on Pullman's College Hill Thursday as 28-year-old Darcy Taylor Spracklin. A Saturday news release from Pillars said the cause of death is multiple gunshot wounds. The manner of death is homicide. The shooter is still at large. Pullman police say somebody found Spracklin unresponsive at 3 a.m. Thursday, and first responders took him to Pullman Regional Hospital. Police announced he had died Friday. The Lewiston Tribune reports Pullman police say the shooting appears to be an isolated incident and there is no known threat to the public. Pullman officials put Police Chief Jake Opkenorth on leave at some point. Spokane television station KREM reported Opkenorth was on leave Thursday, but said city officials have not revealed a reason. The spokesman review reports Washington State Patrol Sergeant Greg Riddle said Friday his agency is engaged in a confidential investigation into Opkenorth, but did not reveal details. Washington State Patrol Communications Director Chris Loftus said, usually the governor's office or local law enforcement requests the Washington State Patrol be brought in for an investigation. Pullman City Council member Trimaine Gaither told the spokesman review city officials directed him to send all media inquiries to Mayor Francis Benjamin. Spokesman Review reports Benjamin has not responded as of Friday. Pullman Police Commander Aaron Brashears directed media questions to a Yakima-based law firm that specializes in labor and employment laws, but the law firm did not respond Friday afternoon. Opkenorth has worked in law enforcement in Pullman since 1992. He became police chief in 2022. Clarkston police say a man found unconscious in a vehicle has died. Clarkston police say a driver in the 600 block of 13th Street witnessed a car which stopped in the roadway yesterday afternoon. The driver walked to the stopped car and found its driver was bleeding from the chest. First responders took the sole occupant of the vehicle to St. Joseph Regional Medical Center, where healthcare workers pronounced him dead. The Lewiston Tribune reports the Assotin County coroner will release the name of the deceased later. Clarkston Police Chief Joel Hastings said police located a firearm near the driver. Hastings said detectives are investigating the incident, which was reported at 4:35 p.m. yesterday. Whitman County Chief Financial Officer Jessica Jensema has told county commissioners the county has an official budget shortfall of nearly $4.2 million. The Whitman County Gazette reports Jensema told commissioners at the December 13th meeting she does think revenues are under budgeted and the official deficit does not reflect actual county finances. Jensema said, "We have this big variance between what actually happens and what is in the budget, and I expect it to be less than $1 million for a deficit." Commissioner Art Swanick said commissioners need to address the under-budgeting of revenue and over-budgeting of expenses. Whitman County commissioners plan to schedule additional budget workshops next month to address discrepancies. Northwest officials expressed condolences following the death of former President Jimmy Carter yesterday. Carter died in Georgia at the age of 100. Washington Governor Jay Inslee noted Carter installed solar panels at the White House at the time of his inauguration in 1977. Inslee wrote on X, formerly Twitter, "There are many reasons to reflect on the legacy of former President Jimmy Carter. One is the vision he had for renewable energy that is now being realized. Reagan took down Carter's White House solar panels, but now they are sprouting up all over the country." Democratic U.S. Senator Maria Cantwell of Washington also applauded Carter's environmental legacy. Cantwell wrote, "President Carter was one of the first presidents to truly understand the value of protecting and preserving our nation's public lands and waters. We owe preservation of premier Alaskan wilderness and many other wild places to his leadership." Democratic U.S. Senator Patty Murray of Washington wrote about Carter's continued public service work after he left office in 1981. Murray wrote on X, formerly Twitter, "President Jimmy Carter lived a life of public service long after he left the White House. His kindness and compassion, whether through his philanthropy here at home or his tireless efforts to broker peace around the world, were a model for all Americans. He will be greatly missed." Idaho Governor Brad Little wrote, "Jimmy Carter will be remembered as a man who dedicated his life to his country. His time in the Navy as governor of Georgia, president of the United States, and his humanitarian efforts after remind us of the importance of service of others. May he rest in peace." Republican U.S. Senator Jim Risch of Idaho wrote on social media on behalf of himself and his wife, Vicky Risch, "God bless President Carter and his late wife, Rosalynn. His service to our country and faith-based efforts to help those in need deserve respect and gratitude. Vicky and I send our condolences to the Carter family." You're tuned into the KRFP Evening Report. This is KRFP Moscow Pullman.
Idahoans are celebrating the official designation of the bald eagle as America's national bird after helping in its recovery. Once close to extinction, conservation efforts, including private land donations for nesting habitats, helped restore the state's bald eagle population to at least 200 nesting sites today. The birds travel through Idaho between November and February. Amy Delich with Defenders of Wildlife says the recognition for the birds was long overdue.
There are almost 70 species of eagles across the world, but the bald eagle is the only one that's found only in North America. So it really is our national bird as far as its territory and range.
Delich says many people assume the bald eagle was already the national bird. While it's been a symbol on the country's seal for centuries, it was never officially designated. The U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service estimated there are roughly 300,000 bald eagles in the U.S. today. State wildlife agencies began aerial surveys of bald eagle nests in the early 1970s as the bird's numbers plummeted. Scientists believed pesticides like DDT were working their way up the eagle's food chain in a process known as biomagnification. Delich says the pesticides interfered with the bald eagle's calcium levels, which made eggshells weak and less likely to hatch.
A species like a bald eagle, which eats a lot of fish, they are essentially getting a dose from everything that those fish have eaten in their lifetimes. So that biomagnification is why these pesticide issues show up worst in some of the top of the food chain animals.
Delich says the federal government banned the use of DDT in 1972. One year later, Congress passed the Endangered Species Act. And ever since, bald eagles have made major rebounds and are considered a premier example of conservation success. For Northern Rockies News Service, I'm Eric Tegedoff.
Programming on KRFP is brought to you in part by One World Cafe, specializing in craft coffee, fresh baked pastries, artisan sandwiches, weekend brunch, wine, beer, and cider on tap. One World Cafe has a web calendar for upcoming live events and a campus location in the Janssen Engineering Building.
KRFP is dedicated to progressive values, including peace and human rights.
New funding is making it easier than ever for Oregon farmers to become certified organic. To achieve certification, farmers must go 3 years without using synthetic additives such as fertilizers or pesticides. The USDA Natural Resources Conservation Service in Oregon has launched the Organic Transition Initiative to provide financial and technical support. Ben Bowl of Oregon Tilth notes this funding is especially valuable because the transition can be costly.
During that time, they have to be farming as organic farmers, but they are not able to access an organic crop premium.
Farmers can also get support through the initiative to develop organic systems for fertilization, building soil, and controlling weeds. Bohl explains this initiative is one of a three-part national USDA organic transition initiative. This five-year program provides mentorship from experienced organic farmers, technical assistance, and an organic market development program. He says with the three programs, the combined $300 million investment in organic farming is historic.
Right now is an amazing time to consider transitioning to organic in terms of all of the support that's available.
Erica Thompson runs a U-Pick blueberry farm outside Corvallis that has been in her family since 1993. Thompson is a little over a year into the three-year process. She says figuring out a new fertility program and disease management has been a challenge, along with understanding the application and documentation process. Thompson says working with the Organic Transition Initiative has been helpful.
Being part of it has really solved or like is in the process of solving all my questions and uncertainties.
Along with farmers, support is available for ranchers and forest landowners looking to go organic. Applications for the current round of funding are due January 17th. More information can be found at farmers.gov/organic. I'm Isabel Charlet, Oregon News Service.
There's an out-of-town band playing a New Year's Eve concert at Moscow's nonprofit Kenworthy Performing Arts Center. They are Boise psych rock band Moon Owls Mages. Earlier this year, KRFP citizen journalists Chloe Barnes and Paul Bush interviewed three members of the four-person band at Boise's Treefort Music Festival. Here's singer Jack Ball, followed by Moon Owls Mages band members Noble Holt and Liam Sliney.
We've been together playing in this arrangement for like 3 years now, three and a half maybe. And before that, my name is Jack. We were in like, I had a solo project, so we would just do that. And so we'd play live. And then I was like, you know what, like, let's convert this from my thing into our thing. And so, yeah, we've just been rocking and rolling forever since then.
I think the main change, before it was like we were kind of just a live band. Like, Jack had already written a bunch of songs and we just were showing up to play them. But then we wanted to make music together, like write stuff together, and then we wrote and recorded this album together, and that's kind of the big changes. The dynamic changed a lot in the sense that Carson and I were now writing songs for the group, and Jack was singing.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
And I was brought on later. I was brought on a little bit after, probably like a year into Moon Owls Mages being an established thing. And I just kind of joined because I was like, hey, my name's Liam, can I join your band? And they were like, sure, that sounds good.
Those were three of the four members of the Boise psych rock band Moon Owls Mages, who are playing New Year's Eve at Moscow's nonprofit Kenworthy Performing Arts Center. The fourth member of the band is drummer Carson Cranny. The show Tuesday night starts at 8 p.m. Moon Owls Mages' latest album is Kill the Crackle. It's available on Bandcamp.
A new scorecard from the Center for Western Priorities points to Wyoming's success as a Western state balancing conservation goals and economic growth, but the state can still learn from its neighbors. The 2024 scorecard looks at three categories: land protection and access, responsible energy development, and land use and planning for growth. Wyoming scored higher than neighboring states Montana, Utah, and Idaho in land protection and access, but scored low among its neighbors in the other categories. The center's policy director, Rachel Hamby, says all the Western states grapple with similar challenges and may find related solutions.
The scorecard shows that it's possible, and even to your advantage as a state, to protect public lands, to steward natural resources while growing and diversifying your economy.
In pro-conservation legislation, Wyoming lawmakers this year formed an Outdoor Recreation and Tourism Trust Fund and board, and they blocked attempts to remove three-year tax exemptions for wind energy. According to the Center for Western Priorities, they also passed rules in continuing efforts to limit federal environmental regulations. Hamby says while there is cause for concern regarding the precedent an incoming Trump administration may set, she said states have a really important role to play.
so many voters in all of these states so overwhelmingly support conservation. And that's not lost on elected leaders. That's not going to just flip because there's a new administration in office.
The 2024 State of the Rockies Project survey shows that for the first time in its 14 years of polling, a majority of Democrats, independents, and Republicans prioritize conservation over energy production. I'm Kathleen Shannon with Wyoming News Service.
And that's it for the KRFP Evening Report for tonight. Taking a look at the weather, 20% chance of snow showers after 10 p.m., patchy fog, otherwise mostly cloudy, low 29. Tomorrow, cloudy, gradually becoming mostly sunny, patchy fog before 7 a.m., high 36. 30% chance of snow after 10 p.m. Tuesday night, New Year's Eve. Otherwise, mostly cloudy, low 27. New snow accumulation, half an inch possible Tuesday night. On Wednesday, New Year's Day, 70% chance of snow, mostly cloudy, high 33. New snow accumulation, less than 1 inch possible. And possibly more snow, up to a half inch Wednesday night, and another half inch possible on Thursday. Currently 34 degrees. If you want to help KRFP keep newscasts like this on the air, plus the newscasts you hear every morning during Morning Mix, and the recordings of local events and the public affairs shows, plus the music and arts programming you hear every day on KRFP, be sure to become a member of KRFP. Memberships are $35 a year, $20 for students and low income. You can mail your memberships to KRFP, 114 East 3rd Street, Moscow, Idaho, 83843. Or you can go to the KRFP website to find out other ways to help KRFP. There's a drop-down box that says Support KRFP. There you can underwrite programming, which is a cost-effective way of letting our listeners know your business supports community radio. You can adopt a DJ. There's a PayPal option and a Patreon button. Also, you can check to see if you've received a KRFP fundraising letter in the mail, also available on krfp.org. And you can reply to that. There's an addressed envelope inside if you got one in the mail. And remember, New Year's Eve is the deadline if you want to count your donations to 501c3 organizations like Radio Free Moscow Incorporated on your tax. Have a good night. This is KRFP Moscow Pullman. I'm Lee Robardis. See you tomorrow.
This is a pre-recorded episode of Flashpoints.
KRFP is a non-commercial community radio station that airs underwriting messages as a cost-effective way to let listeners know your business supports community radio. To sign up for underwriting spots, go to the KRFP website or visit the station at 114 East 3rd Street and pick up an underwriter's form.